First up today, though, an update on the military offensive to recapture the Iraqi city of Mosul. It began 6 weeks ago now, all part of a huge effort to liberate the city from its Daesh captors. And it involves what Time magazine says now are 6,000 US forces, among special forces from various countries, including our own. It's said that up to 50% of the city's eastern section has been secured by the military. Only one bridge now stands across the Tigris River, connecting east and western parts of the city. And the critical figure of 1 million civilians still left there seems to be crucial to everything, because thousands of Islamic State fighters are embedded amongst them, with all that implies for their use as human shields and affecting the advancing forces' tactics. Plus, I'm sure you've heard of UNICEF's claim that a big water pipeline has been hit in the fighting, cutting off fresh water supplies to around 600,000 people. Anthony Cordesman holds the Ali A. Burke Chair in Strategy at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. We spoke to him just before the military campaign started, and I spoke to him again late yesterday to bring us right up to date, and welcomed him back.
Good morning.
Could you give our listeners your assessment of how the Mosul offensive is progressing?
Well, you have seen three sets of forces begin to close, not simply on Mosul, but on the ISIS or ISIL positions around it. The Kurds have been moving from the north to the south. The regular Iraqi forces have been moving east across territory on the eastern side of the river. Mosul is split into two halves by the river. They've made the most significant gains, and they're actually in Mosul. Another set of forces, which are really largely Shiite militias, although there are some Sunni elements, is moving to the northwest, and it has begun to essentially shut the ISIL forces off from the main body in Iraq and Syria. It's linked up at least tentatively with Kurdish forces in the north, but this is considerably to the west of Mosul. Now, in terms of the actual city, it's very intense fighting on the eastern side of the river. It is often building by building. There are very serious problems in coping with large numbers of vehicle-borne suicide attacks. There are tunnels, there are booby traps, there are snipers, they're using civilians as human shields. So the advancing Iraqi forces have to be very, very careful to avoid ambushes, sort of terrorist attacks and suicide attacks, but also to protect the population. And that's limited the amount of air support that can be given, because you can't use air power in ways which risk producing major civilian casualties.
So the presence of civilians there, up to a million, is changing. Well, it's by the sound of you, it's setting new standards for how modern warfare is conducted around civilians.
Well, it certainly is far more restrictive than it has been in previous cases. I'm not sure that this is all that different from the fighting that went on in the southwest in areas like Fallujah and Ramadi, but these were much, much smaller areas. And this is a major city. No one knows how many people are really in it. There are all kinds of numbers appearing in the media for which there is no clear source. But there's no question that civilians were requested to stay, and there now are serious doubts on the part of the various commands as to whether this was the proper course of action, because to some extent they're now trapped and embedded with the ISIL or ISIS forces and can be used at the same time that they are essentially without the kind of support they need for food or medical supplies or simply to have basic security.
What else could have happened, though? You say they're wondering about their strategy.
Well, I think the problem you have here is the assumption that there is always a good military option. And I have the feeling often people simply didn't listen to the military briefings they were given. People talked about this being a fight that would last months, that the choice was to have them stay or there could be as many as a million refugees and displaced persons. Either option, particularly on the edge of winter, would have had a great deal of suffering. There was never any doubt that there would be very significant civilian casualties in liberating Mosul. And people warned that this could be a battle that lasted months. But somewhere along the line, an awful lot of reporting on the war never seems to have paid much attention to what the military spokesmen were telling people.
Right. Well, look, when I read you, though, I mean, this is a real terrible paradox, because I think you make the point in your writing that winning in Mosul offers no guarantees that the Iraqi central government can handle what comes next. But ISIS staying in Mosul offers a far higher likelihood that the Iraqi central government can't be united, reformed, or hold the country together. So it's a sort of it's an appalling Hobson's choice, isn't it?
Well, I think one has to be very careful, because if Mosul is eventually liberated, it looks like it will be, there will be significant civilian casualties, but if you compare them to the kind of casualties there were in urban warfare in World War II, or even in the Korean War, these casualties are going to be very limited. And for many of the people who are involved in this, it will be a liberation. Whatever happens, the conditions are going to be better very quickly once the city is secured than they were under the ISIL forces. The problem of unity is not centered simply around Mosul. It goes far deeper than that. Mosul itself will almost certainly remain largely under Sunni Arab control. But the Kurds, in moving into this general area, already have greatly expanded the area that they occupy and control in previous fighting, far beyond the areas that were once Kurdish.
Mm.
The Shiites now, they're trying to integrate them formally into the security forces. But some of these factions have fought Sunnis in the past. Some of them are not completely loyal to the government. The divisions between Sunni and Shiite go far beyond the problem of Mosul. It's a matter of a struggle for control of the country that's been going on since 2003. So the idea of unity,
yes,
to the extent that it's possible, really depends on having a central government that can point to victories and can create enough security and peace to at least allow negotiation.
So
what happens after that is uncertain.
So do you think we are even able to tilt at the notion of victory in Mosul then at some point in the future?
Well, I think victory is relative. Is victory something where you can drive ISIL out of Mosul? Can you have a relatively secure city that for most of the people who have lived there will at least not have the kind of problems that ISIL constantly presented? Will they be able to return to something approaching a normal life? If that's the definition of victory for one city, that may be true. What's much more difficult is to figure out the future of Iraq. And that really depends a great deal on, will people be willing to compromise? Will there be continuing problems with the Kurds, with the Sunni and Shiite divisions? How will Turkey act in this? What kind of pressures will Iran put on Iraq and the central government? This isn't a matter of Mosul. This is a matter of an entire country.
Well, indeed, you've written that the fight in Mosul and Iraq against ISIS can't be separated from the one against ISIS in Raqqa, the city to the north, and Syria. Why do you believe that's the case?
Well, obviously, if you take all of Mosul, you have to cross the river, which itself is going to be difficult. There's only one bridge that is partially open. It'll be a major operation to do the river crossing, But once you do that, Mosul is not far from the Syrian border. And these are areas where there are many routes, in addition to roads, that can be used to infiltrate forces. If you have a Syria where the ISIS or ISIL forces still have the ability to come back to infiltrate and to threaten, you have to basically create something approaching as much of a border defense as you can, and that is very, very costly in terms of the number of men you have to use, and you still can have incidents. Mm. It isn't a matter of being able to separate the two countries because, quite frankly, there are no natural barriers that provide that kind of protection.
So I just must ask you before I let you go about whether we have any clear signs from the Trump transition team about their plans for the fight against ISIS, which, after all, will, I presume, dominate next year.
Well, I think that so far you have had a number of statements, but have you had clear plans? No. I think that if you see someone like General Mattis appointed as Secretary of Defense, if you see a number of the names that have military experience, you're going to see this fight continue simply because leaving any territory under the control of ISIS or ISIL is going to create a constant problem, level of instability in the Middle East. Leave Iraq, which is a critical part of the world's oil export structure through the Gulf, unstable. And I think the Trump administration that's coming in knows that. But to say that anybody can predict the future of what's going to happen more broadly, I think we have to understand. And again, people don't always listen to the kind of warnings that intelligence experts give. ISIL is only about 30% of the terrorist incidents in the region. It's not only one of the movements that it's fighting. If you defeat it, you face a long struggle against terrorism. Many of the foreign volunteers, the other fighters, will disperse no matter how well ISIS is defeated. And the Trump administration has to know this. This is really a battle against one key element of a threat that expands across a wide area in a war which people have said again and again is a long war lasting years. Mm. And I think that it is very important for people to understand this. Defeating ISIS or ISIL is not going to defeat terrorism, and no one is for years.
All right, Anthony, I'll thank you and wish you a very happy Christmas, and we might speak in the new year. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thank you.
That was Anthony Kortesmann, Professor Kortesmann, an expert in defence, counterterrorism and international security from the Centre for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. And, of course, President-elect Trump has said that he will make an announcement on Monday about the Defence Secretary, expected to be General James Mattis, but we'll see.
From the founder of Apple to comedian Andy Samberg, from the head of Netflix to the man who built the World Wide Web, from the creators of the record-breaking podcast Serial to startups that are breaking ground right here in Australia, if you want to hear from the movers and the shakers, media, technology and culture around Australia and the globe, there is literally one show. It also happens to be the most literally named show. Download this show with me, Mark Fennell, media, technology, culture. Find it on the RN website now or on the ABC Radio app.